everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, March the 5th, 2021. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI. We are in our 11th year now on the radio with our worldwide live listening and podcasts of the show available at buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. A quick shout out to our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you to Dylan Smith. A thanks to Dan Shear, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, Jim Ninsel and the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Dr. Randy Freese, state representative, a Democrat representing District 9, which includes most of the central part of the city of Tucson. Dr. Freese is a trauma surgeon at Banner University of Arizona Medical Center. Dr. Freese treated then-Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and 9-year-old Christina Taylor Green after they were shot in the Tucson shooting tragedy 10 years ago. This past January 8th, Dr. Freese was first elected to the Arizona House of Representatives in 2014. Joining me also in the conversation with Dr. Freese, Sarah Garrett Gasson, columnist and opinion page editor for the Arizona Daily Star. Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And how is that one, the wonder dog Olivia? Is Olivia, I hope, asleep right now?
She is. She's in her usual spot right next to me. So as long as I don't step on her, she should be okay.
She should be nice and quiet there in the home office. Yeah. Dr. Freese, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you for asking.
Well, this session seems to be focused on so-called election reform, how to undo COVID restrictions, including limiting the governor's emergency powers, and this news just breaking, speaking of the governor and emergency powers, Governor Ducey announcing that for businesses, physical distancing and mask protocols will remain in place, but specific occupancy percentage limitations will be expiring. And this applies to restaurants, gyms, theaters, water parks, bowling alleys, and bars providing dine-in services. That news breaking just within the last 15 minutes. Some of your thoughts, please.
Well, Bill, the governor should be having experts giving him advice. So if this is a decision he's making in light of that advice, I support it. But one must realize that physical distancing and capacity are actually very related, interrelated. So, you know, I hope that restaurants are taking that into account, that they have to maximize capacity, but yet maintain the distancing requirements.
This announcement follows 7 weeks, the governor says, of declining cases and the distribution of more than 2 million doses of vaccine. Are we jumping are we getting ahead of ourselves here? Can we ask for patience for a while longer? Is that kind of where you're coming from?
You know, Bill, I really like to think about giving a message of there is a light at the end of this tunnel. You know, this long year plus couple months is coming to an end, or should be coming to an end of pandemic. But what we have to be careful of is that we don't give the wrong impression. That doesn't mean we can be cavalier. This pandemic is still with us. It's still possible to get COVID. It's still possible to get very sick with COVID and get into the hospital. It's still possible to die from COVID. So we do have to, I'm encouraged that the governor is telling us with this announcement that things are getting better and winding down. But the fact that he's just saying, hey, capacity can increase, but we still have to distance. We still have to mask. That's an important thing to remember.
The vote was 31-28 in the House of Representatives on Wednesday along party lines. The Republican-controlled House approved legislation that says business owners need not enforce any state, city, town, or county requirement for people to wear a mask. This sponsor, Representative Joseph Chiplick, is that how it's pronounced?
Chiplick,
our first-term Republican lawmaker from Scottsdale, he argues, Dr. Fries, that that these masks were not needed decades ago to stop the spread of AIDS. I'm just curious your reaction to that.
Well, you know, everyone knows that HIV is not spread by respiratory droplets. It is spread by body fluid contamination, blood, and other body fluids. So the respiratory droplet viruses are highly transmissible. Viruses like HIV and Ebola are not. And he certainly misspoke when he tried to say that masks could help in that area. That's certainly not true. But that's one must understand virology and disease transmission, and that's why policymakers need to be talking with experts when we make policy in trying to slow the transmission of a respiratory virus.
And this goes now on to the Republican-controlled Senate. Do you think this has a pretty good chance of reaching the governor's desk, Dr. Fries?
Unfortunately, I saw what happened in the House. There seemed to be a Republican or two that opposed, but folded to the pressure of party line votes. I stood up and clearly stated in my vote explanation, this bill is anti-science and illogical. However, as you mentioned, Bill, it did pass. I'm concerned it might end up on the governor's desk, and I hope that the governor can do the right thing if it does and veto the bill.
All right, let's bring in Sarah Garrett-Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, Bill, you were asking the questions that I was lined up to ask too, and so I'll just add to this conversation. Do you think that when a lawmaker like Mr. Chaplick brings up seemingly bizarre comparisons like we didn't need masks for AIDS decades ago. Do you think that those sort of arguments, they're not even arguments, but do you think that sort of just bizarre comparison gets any traction with other lawmakers or with the public? It just, to me, it makes absolutely no sense, but I don't know that it wouldn't for other people.
You know, Sarah, I hope it doesn't. Certainly when it gets examined, there was a quick backlash in the media about how ill-informed that statement was. And, you know, I hope that helps the public understand that you can't rationalize bad decisions with ill-informed, remarks. I think the important thing is that, you know, people are recognizing this is a bad policy based on ill-informed, legislators. And we need, in a pandemic, and Bill mentioned at the beginning that we're also contemplating, you know, ways to stop this emergency, new legislation to change our statutes and constitution to allow the legislature to override the governor's power. And one of the things I emphasize is that in an emergency, it's important to have one person, well-informed person by experts making decisions to slow transmission of a rapidly spreading virus. And I don't object to having the legislature weigh in at one point, 90 or 120 days into a pandemic, whether or not we should continue the emergency. But I totally disagree with the legislature reviewing every executive order and giving its approval or disapproval of each one.
And I,
it does seem. Go ahead, Bill.
I was on the follow up to that emergency power. I'm confused on this. So if the governor's hands were tied in this taking away emergency powers, it would have to go before lawmakers, or what would happen if the lawmakers weren't in session? It just seems to open up all sorts of doors that of places that we don't want to go down, Dr. Freeze.
Bill, there's a couple of proposals. I think there's a simple proposal that came from the Senate and might have been defeated that was suggesting that we simply end the current emergency. And then Mr. Kavanaugh had a proposal we voted on this past, I think it was just yesterday, saying that lawmakers, right now, we can call, the legislature can call ourselves back into special session without the governor calling us with a two-thirds of the members, two-thirds of the 90 members, right, 30 senators and 60 House members, signing a petition to call ourselves back in. That can happen right now. He proposed that we create a special change in the Constitution where the legislature, in the face of a medical emergency pandemic that the governor has called, the legislature can call itself back in within 14 days of that call with a 50%, only a majority of people. And then at 14 days, if we haven't called ourselves in, we automatically come back in to evaluate what the governor is doing. And to me, that is too... there's too many moving parts. 14 days is nowhere near enough when you're talking about a transmissible virus, especially one that has an incubation period of 10 to 14 days. So as I said on the floor when we were debating this, I don't have a problem with the legislature coming back 3 months or 4 months or 6 months into the process to reevaluate should we stay or should we exit the emergency, but I don't think we should be coming in at 14 days, and I don't think we should be evaluating every single executive order and approving or vetoing it.
Go ahead, Sarah. I kind of cut you off there before. Just follow
That's
up.
That's okay. I was just going to remark that the Republican majority in the legislature, I'm a bit confused that they're still calling themselves Republicans because they want to exert themselves over other branches of government and voters in terms of that bill that was going to have the legislators decide about presidential electors. It just sounds kind of in another dimension politically,
right,
if you will, and I'm just curious what you think about that, Dr. Freed.
Well, I think there were two proposals, maybe one by Senator Gowen, one by Representative Bollock, about the legislature overriding the vote of the electorate on presidential primaries here in Arizona quite some time ago, even though the U.S. Constitution says the states shall decide how presidential electoral college electors are selected. We chose years and years ago to do it by popular vote, like every other state has switched to. And to go backwards in that sense is baffling. I agree, Sarah.
Then there's the whole issue of tax cuts. We have, I guess, the rainy day fund. It's over $1 billion. Maybe it's even more. Is this the time to be doing tax cuts in light of the COVID situation?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Bill. The budget, the projections for this year are a quite robust cash balance, most of that being one-time money. If you think about the COVID relief, Arizona received about $35 billion federal dollars in COVID relief. Some of that resulted in revenue for the state, right? UI payments, unemployment insurance benefit payments from the state's UI trust fund, which was about $1 billion before the pandemic, is now about $100 million or less. So $900 million of UI benefit payments went out to people in the state that created income tax revenue for the state. The Paycheck Protection Plan, the federal plan that supplemented paychecks for people who lost their jobs, that created revenue for the state, income tax revenue for the state. The bonus surplus checks that the government put up created revenue. So we have proposed by the JLBC, the legislature's economists, about a $1.8 to $2 billion ending cash balance in 2022. The governor's economists, however, predicted much less. In their first budget, they predicted $200 million. They revised that shortly after the JLBC pointed to a larger balance, to about $900 million. Most of that money is one-time money. It should not be available again next fiscal year. So we have to be careful. A tax cut is an ongoing loss of revenue, and we cannot and should not enact new tax cuts based on a one-time robust balance. So I'm concerned about some of the decisions the governor is making, proposing $200 million of ongoing tax cuts this year, increasing that to $400 million next year, and up to $600 million the year after that. That's $1.2 billion of ongoing loss of revenue over the next 3 years. I find that unsound.
Then there are the Pima County officials and City of Tucson elected officials like Steve Kasachek, who had an op-ed in Sarah's area there on the opinion pages just the other day, asserting that lots of money, federal money, is being withheld by the governor and not going to the counties. Do you see any evidence of that?
Yes, there's quite a talk of that. Vaccine support dollars that aren't not making it down to the counties. A very good example of federal money being used by the state in ways that I probably wouldn't suggest, but probably are within the letter of the law. It was way back. The governor decided to take the CARES money that was supposed to go to public safety and pay Department of Corrections salaries with it. Now, I guess one could say, on the edges of the definitions, that could be for public safety, but that wasn't the intent of those dollars. And so I think that is truly happening, yes.
All right, we're going to pause right here. Sarah, you'll be up to the plate after we take the break. But right now I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. And I also like to say home of good comfort food, which we could all use right about now. Mona's, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. And they open at 6:30 in the morning for a full breakfast that they serve. You can go to the website, monasdanishbakery.com. You can put in your order that way. You can call ahead and your bakery goods will be ready, or walk into the bakery and make your order and look at the case that is filled with all those very tempting goodies like cinnamon rolls and blueberry muffins, and on it goes. And, of course, the Danish Kringle. All right, we'll pause right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Dr. Randy Fries is our Friday Focus interview guest. Sarah Garrett Gaston of The Star with me in The Questioning. We'll be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And our Friday Focus interview is with State Representative Democrat Randy Fries. Dr. Fries, representing Arizona's 9th District, which is basically the central Tucson area. Dr. Fries is one of two medical professionals, medical doctors in the Arizona legislature. Also with us is Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star, where she serves as the opinion page editor and columnist. Sarah, you are up to the plate.
Thank you. Dr. Fries, I'm wondering if you could share with the listeners the work you're doing with Representative Cook on HB 2805, the unemployment assistance.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for asking about that. I really love to talk about things that are going well in a good direction in the legislature. We recently, I think you put an op-ed that Mr. Cook and I wrote in the paper the other day.
We
started this work at the very beginning of the legislature. Mr. Cook came up to me and said, listen, I think we can work together. Arizona's unemployment insurance benefit has not been increased since 2000. And it's either 4 or 7. It might have been 2004. And it's a very the unemployment insurance benefit is a fund that is funded by employers, and they pay so much tax on the first $7,000 an employee makes, and it's I don't know, 40 some dollars or so per employee per year. The trust fund was at $1 billion, quite healthy, or close to $1 billion, quite healthy before the pandemic. Now we have less than $100 million in it because it has served its purpose. Unemployment insurance is an important part of keeping the economy afloat and helping Arizona families when a recession hits and they're in between jobs. So the benefit was in Arizona the second lowest weekly benefit in the country at $240 maximum. Everyone doesn't meet the maximum. It depends on how much you were working before you made your claim. And additionally, you could only make $30 a week if you took a part-time job or something, or else your benefit was reduced. So if you made $31 in the week you were getting a benefit, you then only received $239. For every dollar over $30, your benefit was decreased by $1. So what our bill does, and we met every week with Republican legislators, Republican staff, Democratic staff, and our economists, and what our bill does then will increase the maximum benefit to $300 a week, and really importantly, increase the amount that you're able to make at a part-time job to from $30 to $160. And sometimes that's called the disregard. It's kind of difficult to understand. But a family now can make $300 in benefit and $160 in part-time work per week and still receive their full benefits for 26 weeks while they're unemployed in between jobs during a recession.
Go ahead, Sarah.
If the bill passes, I should say. If the bill passes, yes.
I'm curious how, in just if you could share the process of you and Representative Cook are not on the same page on many issues. How do you go about finding a co-sponsor and building those bridges in the legislature?
Well, you know, Sarah, this should not be the unusual thing. This should be how it happens, right? Normally, coalitions should change and evolve with the issue. Mr. Cook and I had agreement that our unemployment benefit system needed to be updated. The pandemic put a magnifying glass on it. My caucus, the Democrats, have been talking for several years now about our unemployment program not being where it should be, the second lowest benefit, weekly benefit in the nation. But the pandemic shined a magnifying glass on it, so it became very obvious we needed to do something. And Mr. Cook saw that, saw our interest, approached me because we have worked together before on other small things, and said, let's work together and fix this. And that's what we were able to do. We were able to get 50 yes votes on this out of 60 House members. 50 people voted yes. The bill is now out of the House and over onto the Senate, and we're hopeful that our Senate colleagues would join us in making this improvement for Arizona families and small businesses. Most small businesses say that their employees are important to them, and they want a program that will help them if for some reason the economy forces them to lay their employees off.
The Arizona House, you and your colleagues approved the governor's plan yesterday that would expand off-reservation gambling. You had some reservations about this, Dr. Freese.
Yes, I did vote no. I have some concerns about expanding gaming to the point that the governor's proposal does. I also have concerns. This legislature has no place in the gaming compact negotiations process. The original compact was negotiated by Governor Hull, I believe, in the early 2000s with the tribes. It was to last 20 years, and it was to be renegotiated with the governor and the tribes. It is due to expire here in 2023 for most tribes. There is a clause in the prior compact that says if negotiations are not complete by 2023, you actually have 3 more years to 2026 before the current compact would expire. So what I had objections to is this governor's administration linked this bill that we voted on yesterday to the closing of agreements for the compact. And so he pulled the legislature into this process, and we did not belong.
The Indian Nation, shouldn't it have been just between? Because I do recall that that PAC back in 2000 with Governor Hull. I recall that, and I don't remember the legislature having this much say in it, Dr. Freese, this time around.
Bill, you're right. The legislature has no place in this negotiation.
Right.
In my view, negotiations between the executive, Governor Ducey, and the tribes, and what Governor Ducey should have done if he wished to have Keno and events betting and fantasy sports betting, he could have gone to the tribes and said, I would wish to remove these things from the compact so they will no longer be a poison pill, meaning right now under the current compact, if the legislature were to try to pass them, it would void the compact. So if he were to renegotiate those three things out, give the tribes what they wanted, I believe they want roulette and craps and other table games and maybe a few more casinos, what he then should have done is sign that compact, close that deal, turn to the legislature and said, now we have an opportunity, legislature, to do this, to increase our revenues from gaming, and then gotten the legislature to pass his bill. But, of course, Bill, that is much harder. He would have two independent negotiations to do. His administration chose to link the two together and put the renegotiation of the compact contingent upon this bill passing, and I objected to that.
Sarah Garrett-Gasson, go ahead.
As you know, early childhood education is one of my my passions, and I'm wondering, how does education overall, and specifically early childhood education or high-quality pre-K, how is that faring in this legislative session?
Well, Sarah, as you know, Arizona used to receive federal grants for pre-K. We stopped receiving them. I can't remember how long ago, but we do have a bill moving through the process. Representative Lorenzo Sierra from the Tolleson area has a bill to create Arizona's own pre-K grants to sort of replace the federal dollars that we've lost, to escalate up from, I think, $7 million the first year, and it increases over the next 3 years. And one of the reasons why that is so important is one of the things that the federal government takes into account when they stop giving you federal money is how much state funds you put into these programs. And if we start putting state funds into pre-K grants and giving low-income families grants to get their children into pre-K schools, the federal money, the federal government is more apt to supplement that or match it or do something. So very encouragingly, this bill is moving. Of course, it would be a budget consideration. So whenever a bill is moving and passes out of the House or the Senate, if it has money attached to it, it also must find itself appropriated that money through the budget. So it's a long road, but we're actually trying to debate and consider concepts that will help our families get some funding for pre-K.
I want to return to COVID. We were talking here on the program with Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, last week. He's very concerned about nurses specifically leaving the profession. I'm sure some doctors will be leaving as well in the wake of COVID and the emotional toll all of this has played out on your profession. Dr. Freese, please address that.
Well, you know, there is some, I don't know what I'm going to call it. It just, you know, it was difficult. At the very beginning, it was very difficult. I was in the hospital and, you know, I don't take care of COVID patients because of COVID, but I take care of patients that have COVID and also have a surgical problem or have COVID and also have trauma and traumatic injury. So, you know, it was quite a mental strain, very worried about bringing COVID home to our family. You know, there was no vaccine. We were relying heavily on PPE, the personal protective equipment. And there was always rumors of things running short. And you know, would your N95, you know, how many times can you use it before? Should we re-sterilize them? You know, there are some hospitals that were choosing to re-sterilize them, one-time use and then re-sterilize. Other hospitals chose to have you reuse it for weeks at a time. So, yes, it provided some mental stress, and I think that we might have caused some people on the higher end of their career to retire early, but I also think that some people were strengthened by this experience and in their conviction to be in healthcare. It's hard to say exactly what those numbers would look like, but I wouldn't doubt that some people chose to retire sooner.
Wearing the protective equipment, especially some of the nurses who are wearing it for 10 to 12-hour shifts, that must be really, really confining, Dr. Freese.
You know, for me, I was able to wear it when I was taking care of patients and then remove it if I was in my office. But you're right, the nurses, the bedside caregivers that are always there, had to wear it for very long periods of time. And I've seen photos and I've talked to nurses where, you know, they've got the pressure marks on their nose. The mask is designed to fit tightly because it's supposed to keep the air from coming around the mask. It needs to go through the filter. So it's designed to have pressure, and it could be uncomfortable after many hours, for sure.
Most of the lawmakers have been vaccinated. Has there been any talk about that up at the legislature?
Well, you know, Bill, just recently, ADOA has opened up vaccinations for lawmakers and staff. That happened, I want to say, just last week. So some lawmakers over a certain age have been able to get vaccinated, but it wasn't opened up to all lawmakers and staff until just a few days ago. So those appointments are happening now, I think.
Sarah, any closing remarks on your behalf?
Yeah, I'm wondering about just the attitude at the legislature. You've been there a few years. How has the COVID and the pandemic experience changed the tenor or the atmosphere of the legislature, or has it?
Well, it is demonstrated to me the differences that exist. I mean, the House particularly, the Senate was better with its COVID protocols at the beginning of the session, but the House in particular was really trying to find an in-between area between people's attitudes and beliefs and science, in fact. And to me, it would have been so much easier to just say, we're going to do these things because science says that's what's best. So in the House, we do silly things like, well, you must wear a mask. Oh, unless you're sitting at your desk on the floor, then you can take your mask off. I mean, you know, that just, I can't follow it outside of trying to make somebody who is a non-believer in masks feel more comfortable. You know, when you're talking about public, you have to do what's best for the whole group, not just for one or two people who may have issues. And it would have made so much. I wear my mask whenever I'm not in my office by myself. I wear my mask all the time. There are members who sit at the desk on the floor and don't wear their mask, and they speak into their microphone not wearing their mask. We have air filters in the building and things like that, but that floor is a big space, and it takes a lot to clear that air. So we didn't strike the right chord, I will say, and we needed better leadership on COVID protocols and to try to find a middle between science and personal belief was not the right avenue. We should have come down heavily on the side of science, and we did not.
All right. On that note, Dr. Randy Freese, thank you very much. We'll circle back with you as this session moves forward. Who knows how long this could go, huh, Dr. Freese?
Well, you know, we have some work to do, Bill. We do. We have some work to do.
Indeed. All right. Sarah Garrett-Gasson, stick around. Dr. Freese, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. I have a few things to talk about with Sarah. We'll take the break right here and be right back. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our thanks to Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management for our live line support. And speaking of the live line, Sarah Garrett Gasson, opinion page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, is with us on the live line. And Sarah, a couple of headlines from the week here concerning COVID. The governor ordering all schools to open classrooms March 15th or after spring break. And today's announcement, Sarah, about the specific occupancy percentage limits now will expire, and that applies to restaurants. I got the sense Dr. Freeze thinks we're moving far too fast in all of this. What was your thought?
That was the impression I got too, and I have to say that I would agree. I think I know kids are itching to go back to school, and parents as well, and I hope that I guess I have much more faith in the schools on the ground trying to find ways to make this safe rather than just the governor announcing one day. I don't think that's really, really helpful. And it's also kind of come as a surprise where now there's a date or a day after, right after spring break, which is different in different schools. But to just sort of wave the wand and say, this is what we're going to do, leaves schools scrambling in some cases. So I know kids want to get back to school. Parents want to get them back to school. Teachers want to go back if at all possible. But it just sort of by his order, I think Governor Ducey isn't really tuned in to the complications and the uncertainty that this is going to create.
Yeah, because some parents are saying, certainly at TUSD, I think 1 in 3 so far that have been polled, we're not sending our kids back until everybody's vaccinated, probably to the fall. This announcement from the governor probably should have been a little more specific in that saying there will be an in-person option available. I think it's confusing, Sarah.
I agree. And yeah, I know parents don't necessarily feel comfortable sending their kids back, nor do teachers and other school personnel if they haven't been able to get vaccinated. Are they being asked, do you want to go back? What happens if you're not ready for medical reasons or other concerns to go back in person? So I think, and plus just the logistics of, if you're a kindergartner, you've never had regular school, so you don't know. And I'm just envisioning teachers having a really hard time keeping these kids who've been isolated and away from their friends. I mean, how do you keep first graders running up and hugging each other when they're excited to see each other? I don't know.
Sarah, I've got about a minute left here. What's in the Sunday Star on your end of things in the opinion area?
Thanks for asking. We are glad to have Doonesbury, the cartoon strip, back. Gary Trudeau had taken some time away, and so he's back now, so we have him on Sundays. We also have a piece by Terry Bracey, who I know is one of your regular guests.
Yep.
Who's writing about is Biden the new FDR? And I think it's one of his best columns yet. He always brings such an interesting perspective. And we have a piece from our local conservative / libertarian columnist, Jonathan Hoffman, writing about the recall attempt on Governor, I'm sorry, Mayor Romero. I gave her a promotion. Mayor Romero, which came close to getting to the point where the signatures would actually have to be checked and verified and all of that. So the recall effort is over, but Jonathan weighs in with his thoughts on the issues and on Mayor Romero.
All right. We will look forward to that in the Sunday Star. Sarah Garrett Gasson, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon and a great weekend. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Buckmaster on a Friday continues right after this. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's time for Weekend Watch. We made it to the weekend. Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. I'm so excited they're doing that slow rollout. Finally coming. It's coming now to the land of enchantment, a return to tourism. So this means now is the time to start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org so you can make that three-hour road trip over to Silver City in a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. So many things to do and some great places to stay. Again, the website, southwestnewmexico.org. Now, the longtime host of Weekend and watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, and Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, are you ready for a big weekend?
Oh, I am ready like I've never been ready before. A spectacular Friday. I'm just going to take the rest of the day off, tell all my clients that Bill Buckmaster said would be okay.
Do it. The weekend is started and ready to plow into it.
Indeed.
What's going on this weekend at Monterey Court?
Yeah, well, you know, blues enthusiasts, and I obviously count myself among them, as you know, will be excited to know that Chicago blues legend Johnny Rawls is in town, and he is going to be performing this evening at the Monterey Court on Miracle Mile, backed up by Tucson's own Bad News Blues Band. Now, I'm going to be there myself, and I'll be making some intentional food pairings from the Monterey Court Cafe that will make the moment even more magnificent, like the barbecued pulled pork sandwich and, of course, the blues burger with extra blue cheese. Now, the show starts at 7 o'clock tonight. Reservations are a must, so call 207-2429 and get ready to get your blues on. Bill, I would imagine that you caught a few blues shows yourself growing up in Chicagoland.
You better believe it. Chicago blues love it. So this show is a live show tonight at Monterey Court.
Live show tonight at 7 o'clock, yep.
Very, very cool. How about the Brewers? Anything going on with our Brewers?
Yeah, well, with temperatures in the 80s this weekend, I'll definitely be logging some time by the pool. But first, I'll be heading downtown to 1055 Brewing Company to pick up some of their just-released cans of XOXO Coffee Stout brewed with coffee from Tucson's own XO Roasting Company. Now, Bill, you might think that a stout is way too big of a beer to enjoy in the warmer months, but this one is a much lighter-bodied stout. In fact, the word poolside is even written on the can, so that's all the permission I need. This is really the first time that one of 1055's flagship beers has gotten canned, so pick up some pints of history this weekend down at 1055.
Sounds like an excuse for you to get out the old Speedo as you go poolside. All right. One of our favorite places in town, El Charro. My goodness, they've been around a long time, and they've got a great future.
They absolutely do. And, you know, they're going to be celebrating their 100th anniversary in 2022, if you can believe it. But they just can't wait to start the celebrations, which is why the Flores family has just launched their 99th anniversary menu. Now, this is anchored by the Combo 99, a collection of recipes from years past. The menu features a 99th anniversary rellenos, a fun rotating tribute to the tamale, starting with jackfruit and sunflower chicken tamales, some fun gluten-free bowls, and a whole host of other special dishes that mark the occasion. Now, this special menu will be available until May of this year, but this weekend is when it officially rolls out. I say happy 99th to El Charro. You can just imagine what kind of fun they have scheduled for their 100th next year, Bill.
You can only imagine. I hope we are all there for it. It sounds delicious, though, on the 99th. Matt, have a great weekend.
Cheers, Bill. You too.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, everyone here at KVOI, including engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. All of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend.